KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Aurora Colony Vineyards 2015 Jazz Festival, August 9th, with doors opening at 2 p.m. and performances from 3 to 9 p.m. The Aurora Colony Vineyards is located at 21338 Oak Lane Northeast in Aurora, Oregon. Performers include Tony Lincoln, the Ron Steen Band, Picante Latin Jazz, Tom Grant, and many more. Again, that's the Aurora Colony Vineyards Jazz Festival, August 9th, from 2 to 9 p.m. More information about directions and ticket prices can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Preference, an experiment in queer radio here on KBOO. We'll be with you for the next hour leading into Hard Knock Radio. Thanks for being here. This is a slot where we're trying out a series of different queer programs. For example, last week, Cutie Puck Talk was on the air. It was a great show, a great conversation between a couple of folks talking about queer and trans people of color issues here in town. We look forward to other programs beginning to air. I'll be here next week for the first half of this 6 to 7 slot. We'll be chatting with the folks who are now co-executive directors at Q Center, our local queer community center, Justin and Stacy. So tune in and we can find out what's happening at Q Center next week at 6 o'clock. I want to give a mention of a study that just came out in the American Journal of Public Health, just published a couple of days ago. And perhaps this isn't going to be a surprise to anyone, but it's definitely food for thought. The study is titled, well, the article on the study was titled, "Your Doctor is Likely to be Biased Against LGBT People." This is from advocate.com. And it really is a study of 200,000 medical professionals and their participation in something called the Implicit Association Test. And, it suggests that there's a long way to go in attitudes towards queer folks in the medical profession. think my advice is always shout and shout louder. If you're not getting the care you need, ask for it. If you're running into a stumbling block with a doctor, go to the clinic head. See if you can get a conversation going about how your needs differ from the treatment that you're receiving. That's at least a place to begin. We're here on Preference. Today we have a great topic. Jason Ingram is here to talk about the ex-gay movement. Jason, thanks for being here.
Yes, it's great to be here again, Alan.
Yeah, wonderful. You were here with us on the air last year, last summer, perhaps.
Indeed so.
When the slot was filled by the fabulous Out Loud, now retired. And you have an exhibit down at Q Center right now.
Speaking of Q Center, yes. It'll be great to have Stacy over there. I was just over there talking to her today. And they're doing a lot of really cool things there these days. So definitely check it out. And the month of August, during business hours and some special events, the gallery should be open. So if you can't make the event on the 13th, then you can come in and check it out and learn a few things about what's going on with conversion therapy and survivors of those kind of programs.
All right. So we'll get into that. But first, tell us about you.
Me? Well, I was born in Portland, Oregon here, and my stomping ground was out in the Pearl. That was back in the 80s. I went to Metropolitan Learning Center and finished that in 91 and started making tapes. And then I sent a few tapes into the late Richard Francis and Barbara Bernstein years ago. And so Barbara had me on in 91. It was funny because she had me sit down and she thought my music was really interesting. And then she said, we have Jason Ingram in the studio, who I just found out is 17. I thought that was funny. And then it was an honor to get on Richard Francis's show because he was the one that got me into experimental and avant-garde music, even at the age of 13. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't been exposed to such creative music at a young age, and it just really touched me.
That was all here, KBOO.
And thanks to KBOO, yes. KBOO is awesomeness.
Wonderful. So take us beyond your graduation from MLC.
Well, I had an untreated mental illness and was just suffering and ended up homeless in Anchorage. And I became a born-again Christian at the age of 20. And I call it the worst and best thing that ever happened in my life because it did rescue me from a lot of things that really could have messed up my life. And I guess I needed more parenting, you know, things like that. It gave me a lot of things that... you know, the liberal community growing up and all this kind of stuff, you know, was good and bad. And so I needed to fill in where my needs were. And then, so the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 years were okay. Went to Bible school, was a missionary for a while. And then I started suffering again. And then I started really starting to think about my sexuality. And the more I thought about it, I kept... feeling and kept, of course, in that culture, what we call fundamentalists or fundies, is lack of a better term, Bible-based Christianity. You know, they believe that being gay is a choice, and a lot of it, that's what it comes down to. And I really thought that this was a product of a lot of different things in my life, especially growing up around the gay community. And so I decided that I was going to be one of these, quote, success stories that I had heard a few of them and believed them. And now I challenge them because what the so-called ex-gay movement does is, you know, they don't have a lot of science to what they do. And so they have to get these people to tell these stories about how they've changed from gay to straight. And it's interesting how easy it is to totally expose those and figure out what's really going on.
Well, tell us what some of those success stories sound like.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of them were because they were involved with gay activities that were harmful. And it seems like, you know, strict versions of Christianity don't seem to paint a picture of moderation very well. It's really extreme. You either are, you know, looking for sex in very dark places with a lot of drugs and a lot of, you know, dangerous things and getting diseases, and that's exactly what people do. So they come out of that thing thinking, oh, well, that's all evil, or they're in a bad relationship, or you have it. Now, here's the thing. You got to consider most of these people that claim to have success stories are actually just bisexual, and they're just flipping. And so my story was I exclusively dated women before I was a Christian. That was my preference at the time. I just didn't want to explore my other feelings. But it seemed to happen, but I didn't start getting involved with men until my 30s either. So I was in the ex-gay movement before I was even intimate with any men. It's just really funny how a lot of these stories are like that. So I'm one of the actual stories of what the ex-gay movement really is, except for I suffered a lot of trauma because I went to an actual straight camp. Most of the trauma people experience is being fired from churches and, you know, losing their spouse and their family and not being able to see their kids and things like that because for various reasons. And that's a different type of trauma. So my story was in 2000, I started going to sexual addiction groups for men because that was the closest thing to do in Anchorage because they didn't really have any of those kind of resources there, so to speak. And then I finally just decided I was going to check in to a residential program out in rural Kentucky. And I completed that in 7 months. And then I started just having symptoms of trauma and nervous breakdowns, and I couldn't function. And I had to get on disability. And so that's been, you know, almost 10 years since I got out of the ex-gay movement. And I put that in quotes because there really aren't ex-gays. I don't believe there are people that stop, you know, acting on their feelings. And I don't consider that being ex-gay. They're just not having sex, mm-hmm. at least with the same gender.
Mm-hmm. Well, straight camp doesn't sound very attractive. What was it like?
Well, it was, how do I say it? It's really interesting, and I admit today that there was definitely a divine presence there. There was lots of prayer. There was a lot of emphasis on spirituality and spiritual growth. And I can say that I had some experiences, and I think that made me feel like that everything going on at that place was God. God was doing this, God was doing that, because I felt that God was touching my life in certain ways. Was God turning me into a straight person? That actually wasn't happening, and it started scaring me too. But I definitely felt something spiritual going on. Now, that being said, just because God, you know, or however you view the divine, is doing something positive to a group of people that are praying and believing, that doesn't mean everything that's going on in that group that God approves of or has anything to do with. So there was a lot of what I call men controlling and feeling justified to criticize and insult and humiliate people on a regular basis. And the other students, many of them had been fired from like programs like Teen Challenge. So they had a lot of real street smart type guys in there. And I was being harassed and having stuff stolen and things like that. So it was actually dangerous. So yeah, so I did develop a case of PTSD. It wasn't really heavy, but it was enough to where I'm still healing from it, even though it's been a decade.
What's your sense of the experience that other folks that were in this camp in rural Kentucky, what were they experiencing at the same time you were there?
Well, I have gotten to talk to some of them, even recently. They've graduated. They're still doing the same kind of practices, as far as I know. Very dangerous, very brainwashing, humiliating, very cult-like practices, and they can all do it legally. They have deep pockets. They have good lawyers. Here's what's interesting is that it seemed like every other guy that came into that program, I had a sense that they were there because they weren't gay. They were straight. They just had sexual issues. For instance, a youth pastor who was messing around and flirting with the, you know, girls in his youth group. You know, they don't know what to do, so they send him out to this camp. So it's not just for gays, but a lot of them are. And here's the thing, is that conversion therapy and straight camps, they will never admit that they do conversion therapy, very rarely. Even the Portland Fellowship says, well, we don't do conversion therapy. I even called them and I said, hey, I'm doing an article about conversion. I called it reparative therapy a couple years ago because there was an article. I just wanted to see if you guys wanted to add anything to that. And right away, this guy is like, we all call ourselves reparative therapy. It was funny because I didn't even like call them reparative therapy. So they're so defensive about that because they say, well, you know, conversion therapy is trying to get a gay person to be straight. And we know that doesn't happen. So we just help them to, and then they give you this weird, weird mesh of words that basically says the same thing. And it was funny, though. This one guy said, we're a Christian residential program focusing on sexual issues and da-da-da. And I started like, so I'm like, oh, gosh, that's the same thing they told me to tell people. It's so funny.
And straight camp, where you were at men and women?
No, this was men only.
Men only.
Yeah.
And did folks need a recommendation, say, from a church to enter, or you can...
You know, I don't remember. It was very expensive. So that was probably the best recommendation, is you give them a lot of money.
So what's the legal status of conversion therapy these days?
Oh, yeah. So it's a hot topic these days in the state of Oregon because, as you know, they passed a bill saying that it's banned for minors. So it's a tiny step in a bigger picture. And here's the thing, is that no matter how many laws we make, they're still going to do it. There's still going to be a fragment of people that are going to believe in this stuff. And, yeah. It's going to happen. So they banned it for forcing minors to go to these camps. That was about 10 years ago. So yay for that. So what did they do? They send their kids overseas now. So they always find a way around it. And I'll get to that in a bit. This whole international thing, I'll get to that. Wow. It's crazy.
What do we know about what folks are doing here in Oregon?
Well, in Oregon, you know, I am more of what I'd consider myself an artist and a musician, and I try to stay out of politics. I think it's awesome what people do, and I'm totally for them. I'm just too scatterbrained and disorganized to like do anything like that. So that's more your area, right?
Well, perhaps, but I know that you did organize around a particular conference last year.
Yes. It was actually, the event was the Restored Hope Network, which I consider to be the later embodiment of the former Exodus International, which closed down 3 or 4 years ago. And this group, the Restored Hope Network, is run by Ann Polk, and you might know her husband, who was ex-gay, supposedly, and then came out of the closet and things like that. And I had dialogued with her some, and it was really interesting to kind of see from their perspective. But anyways, the Restored Hope Network, they're an umbrella-type ministry. You know, I don't think you could go there and say, I need conversion therapy. They say, well, we don't do that, and we won't send you anywhere that really does, but we will send you, you know, numbers of places you can go to around the world that will help you with your issues and da 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 da, and you know, they'll give you this big jargon and stuff like that. And anyways, what's going on in Oregon for the most part, I think, is a lot of apathy. I think that this issue, because it's out of the news a lot, and because there's so very few of these anti-gay ministries anymore, and the fact that Exodus International had dissolved, that people don't think it's much of a hot topic anymore. The truth is, there's still young people that are being influenced by this, whether they're getting that kind of therapy or not. It is responsible for so much mental trauma, anguish, and even suicide. And I think that, you know, anybody who was really, really involved in, you know, gay marriage and, marriage equality and things like that, I think this is a great, great issue to get involved in.
So let's talk about what's happening at Q Center.
Q Center. Yes, yes, yes. Well, I have over 30 pieces of artwork. It's my most extensive exhibit that I think I've ever done. It's pieces from the last 12 years. Some of the art I did while I was at Straight Camp and even before that. And then I have some really edgy, very disturbing, even triggering pieces that I'm kind of scared of because people are scared of them. But you should go and see them because they're really cool. And then I've got a video that's going to be playing on a loop. Hopefully we can get the everything to work out there. So you can come there anytime and watch a little bit of it. But it's on YouTube as well.
We're chatting with Jason Ingram here on Preference, an Experiment in Queer Radio. We're talking about Jason's current exhibit at Q Center.
Mm-hmm.
Exposing the ex-gay movement is...
They called it Mercy.
They called it Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic is exposing the ex-gay movement. And next Thursday...
Yes, on the 13th.
You have a reception presentation at the Q Center to go along with the exhibit. Let's hear about that, Jason.
Yes. Wonderful curator, Cindy Sorndorf, has taken over the project, getting really cool stuff up at that gallery. And we're probably going to have the event in the main room, the multipurpose room, and you can still go in and see the exhibit. And I'll be speaking about the topic I'm speaking on now, some of my experience. We might have a minister who's also an ex-gay survivor from MCC that would come and share and talk about recovery and things like that. He's also a survivor. I think I mentioned that. And there's going to be some live music. And I was going to predict the end of the world, but no, I decided not to. That's a little cliche. And I'm not that good at math either. So I thought I would just tell everybody my story. And hopefully we will get a sense of how urgent this situation is and how different it is.
I think you brought some music with you.
Yeah, yeah. Let's roll one of those songs here. And then we will come back. And then I'll let you know. We'll play maybe half of it, and I'll let you know when to kill it.
All right, we're going to hear a little music from Jason Ingram here on KBOO.
From me, a piece of identity, but I got it back. It was more than just ID, it's a part I was hiding. But I realized that. This horrible dream, loose
it taking control of things. And I'm speaking now. Some sessions. These were religious obsessions, but I'm healing from it. Oh, I'm healing from it. I gave in to the walls made by fear, built by lies, trapped.
I used to do a production called Identity Thieves, and it was kind of a performance piece. And my inspiration was Peter Santoscano, who is a character actor, and he traveled with this show called Doing Time at the Homo Nomo Halfway House. He's absolutely brilliant. And I thought, you know, I need to tell my story, and I do art and video and music, and I'm not really good at either one of them, but I thought if I do all of them, maybe it'll look good. And so after doing a thing in Memphis back in 08, I decided to put together a whole thing, and I went up north to Seattle and did a presentation at a church in 2010, and I've been doing it about every year, and every now and then somebody will contact me. This was nice. I wasn't going to do this year. Actually, the event last year was actually traumatic for me. There was some events that happened alongside of it, and I don't want to get into it right now, but it was extremely painful, and it was a hard time in my life. But last year, I did find the love of my life, my partner, and I don't know what I would do without him. I mean, he has brought joy into my life like I could have never imagined. I mean, I was already happy and blessed, but wow, I had no idea how fulfilled my life could be meeting somebody exactly who I wanted and way more than I'd ever expected. So love you, Donnie, if you're listening.
Wonderful. We're chatting here on Preference with Jason Ingram. You mentioned the international scope.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I just sort of glanced at the Portland Fellowship website, and it looked like the fellow was speaking in Korea. So I thought, you know, and Korea is such a Christian nation. So these guys that consider themselves ex-gay are now taking this and focusing on other countries. And, you know, they don't like to call it conversion therapy, reparative therapy. They come up with new terms and new methods about every couple of years because what they do doesn't work. It does way more harm than good, and especially to young people. And it's an epidemic, and it's going underground. And that's one of the reasons why people really don't know about this these days. And it's not a hot topic except for, you know, this legislation thing. But they have managed to bombard the internet and get stuff out in other countries. And I tell you, when it comes to being gay and when it comes to church stuff, and especially when it comes to American missionized Christianity, this is huge. I was a missionary in Russia, and I know that they just, I mean, yeah, they worship Jesus, but they practically worship America too. So whatever we do, they do. It's the same thing with Mr. Smiley that went to Africa and brought his anti-gay gospel out there. And it's happening all over the world now. I don't know how many nations are affected, but I would love to have stuff translated into Spanish, Russian, and hopefully Korean.
It's one of our odder exports at a time where we are having this really interesting discussion about rights for queer folks of different kinds, and a conversation that's thickening, even if it's not necessarily reaching the needs of everyone. And yet here we have these folks who, I don't know, I are fleeing a climate that's less hospitable to homophobia for more welcoming shores, or I'm not even sure how to describe it. The sense that folks must have of what it is that's being brought to their doorstep.
Well, it's interesting how so many countries in the world already have a very anti-gay mentality. So bringing in a new religion, and one that's, especially Pentecostalism, is just huge, widespread. And they get so excited about, oh, we finally have an answer to what to do with gays. Instead of kicking them out, let's change them. Mm-hmm. And for them, that's an act of compassion. And that's one of the things that's hard for it, is because it looks like they're doing such good things. And they even feel like they have the right motives. And it looks like compassion. And in fact, that even makes it more dangerous, because you swallow the pill, because it's a nice, sweet thing. It's like, oh, they're so nice. I mean, and these people that run the ex-gay movement now, they're all about, PR and trying to act more liberal and trying to come off as being more liberal and accepting. But here's the thing, is that if somebody believes that somebody is not born gay, that they choose that, if that's the way all LGBT people are, okay, they can keep that belief to themselves. But if they're going to impose that onto other people, especially young people, then we need to do something. We just can't sit there and let these people poison the minds of young people and bombard the internet and go across, to other nations and spread this stuff. We need to really act up. And I can't think of a better time than now, because people are interested in it. We're one of the first states that had a ban on conversion therapy for minors. And it'll go from state to state, like marriage equality did. And then before you know it, we're going to be banning all forms, and we're going to make it so difficult that people are going to think, wait a minute, if I'm going to go to an anti-gay therapist, maybe there is something wrong with it. Because if we don't, make it very clear to the world that this is wrong, that this is harmful, people might not know it. I'm not necessarily for people yelling and holding signs, yet if there's nobody out there saying that this is wrong, there's a lot of people that might not even question whether reparative therapy, conversion therapy, is wrong. I didn't question it, and my family was all against it. And I knew better, yet I was driven and I was stubborn. Yet I'm really glad that there were people in my life to tell me that, not to go to straight camp and not to do this because it was harmful. And therefore, I made a choice either to listen to them or not. And I chose to go through this stuff. And by the grace of God, I'm sitting here today and I survived. It's amazing how many people take their lives that have gone through these things, especially these straight camps. And if they don't, many of them are still full of shame. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to go public about it. And a lot of them end up in very intense, whether it's PTSD, or whatever it is, a lot of them end up with serious substance abuse problems. The problem about the suicides with ex-gay people, and again, I'm saying that in quotes, is that we don't have the numbers like we do that with people that are dying of HIV/AIDS. I'm not saying that this is any comparable to the AIDS crisis. I'm saying that it's really hard to pin them down, because we're talking about a society that is very secretive. And not only that, they're going underground a lot more when it comes to being public. And they're definitely working on their image. But they're the same thing. It's the same thing they've been doing for decades, saying that, oh, we love these people, we accept them, therefore we're going to change them. And that's why we accept them, because they want to be changed, and instead of saying, this is what they were born, God made them this way, they're special, and we're going to treat them just like everybody else. And that's what I demand from churches. And it's hard, because we can't expect a very stubborn religion that is trying to pick and choose all these different Bible scriptures, because nobody can, nobody can live all of them, but they happen to pick ones that fit, a culture that maybe existed 50 to 100 years ago. And then every couple of generations, somebody says, hey, we can play electric guitars and not go to hell. And oh, great, we can play electric guitars now. And, oh, we can have beer now. Oh, good. And so I think down the road, they're going to eventually say, hey, we're going to let a trans person or a lesbian person or a bi or a gay person be able to lead worship and preach and run a church. And, you know, I think in the future they're all going to be that way. And there'll be just a few remnants of people, like there are churches, like I went by a church in Kentucky that was an actual white supremacist church. But those are very few. And I see a world in the future that is going to have LGBT people not even need rainbow flags anymore, because it'll be so normal.
If someone was listening and they were considering or participating in this conversion therapy, what would you advise them?
I would really have to meet them on where they're at in their faith. They really, really love God. They really sincerely want to do the right thing. And they feel like that being LGBT is not a part of them, that it's coming from some kind of spirit or some type of abuse or something in their past or their family. And they feel like they have to get rid of that demon or whatever. And I'm saying that, okay, if it's not working, then challenge it and study the Bible and pray. That's how I did it. It was funny, though. I don't consider myself a Christian anymore, yet being a Christian and studying the Bible and praying actually helped me to come out of the closet. And coming out of the closet helped me to be closer to God, because I wasn't carrying this shame that was like hindering my prayer and my faith. So it was just, it was amazing what coming out of the closet did for me and for my Christianity. I know that sounds really weird to some people. So anyways, August 13th, mark your calendars. We're going to be opening the doors at 9 o'clock, and then we're going to be having a presentation at 7:30. Admission is free. If you can't make it, come in sometime during this month and see the exhibit. It'll be up until the 30th. The location is the Q Center. That's 4115 North Mississippi Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97217. Again, 4115 North Mississippi Avenue. And if you need more info, you can email me at gaypray, like I'm gay and I pray, gaypray@gmail.com. And my name is Jason T. Ingram.
And that is a presentation with some music and perhaps some surprises on Thursday, August 13th, next week. Doors open at 6, and the presentation is at 7:30. There's no admission fee. And as Jason said, the exhibit is up all month at Q Center, so check it out in their gallery. Business hours and some other times. You know, there's a lot of evening meetings at Q Center, so you can kind of wander in when you want to more often. Almost more often than not. Jason, thanks so much. Do you have last thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a song, I think. I think we found the song. I'm just going to play you about a minute. This is one I haven't performed in about 5 years, and it's called Loveland, and it's a fun little tune, so I hope you guys enjoy it. And if you can't make it out, at least see if we can connect on the web. Find out what you can do, whether it's little or big. I don't need any of your money. I don't even need to put you to work. I just want you to get creative and find a way that you can do your activism and really, really take on this cause.
I am living in the land of germs. I am living at the diet of worms. Can you please show me? Can you please show me the way to Loveland? The way to Loveland.
All right, that was some music from Jason Ingram. We're here on Preference, an Experiment in Queer Radio here on KBOO. This program and so many others on this fabulous radio station, they're archived on our website, kboo.fm. So you can go and you can listen to amazing shows on your own time. In the last week, I've gone back and listened to Joanne Hardesty talking with women from Black Lives Matter here in Portland, an interview with Teresa Rayford about upcoming Don't Shoot PDX events. One of the new shows we've got, QTPOC Talk, in this time slot, and more. Listen to some other great stuff. So check that out. Just go and wander through the schedule, see what grabs you, and check out past shows. It's very exciting. Jason's going to hang out with us. We're going to rap about some other stuff that's happening in the news and Boston. You're welcome to chime in, as well as any callers, anybody who wants to call in and talk about what Jason's been talking about, conversion therapy, the quote ex-gay movement, or any of the topics we're going to brush across. And some of this stuff we've mentioned in other forums in past weeks. There's some interesting things happening in Seattle. This Seattle Police Department has launched their Safe Space campaign. So businesses, organizations, schools, even folks in the community can put up these signs that say safe place, and this is supposed to be safe place for LGBTQ folks. The idea is to have folks who are prepared on hand to basically call the police. And I think there's a lot of folks, we've talked with folks in the past, Haley O'Shaughnessy, about, for example, a few weeks ago, about the dangers of that a lot of people experience in interacting with the police and inviting them in to their lives, because the police are, you know, for trans folks, for poor folks, folks of color, the police are a threat. And so this Safe Space campaign has, you know, I think triggers some folks to think, what is the role of policing in our communities? The Seattle Police Department explicitly speaks to intersectionality. How well they act on that is a great question, and something that folks monitoring the Safe Space campaign, Safe Place campaign, as well as other Seattle PD activities, will really have to focus on. And it's one we have to look at here as well. Police department that's officially under sanction for violence against folks with mental illness, as well as under the watch of many of us for any other number of reasons. So that's something. Another thing that's happening up north, there's an activity called the Trans and or Women's Action Camp, TWAC. And they are, they have been operating in Seattle to protest ICE detentions. This is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And opposition to ICE holds, which are basically the folks who are arrested for being undocumented and in this country are put in these essentially prisons. Wow. Run by ICE.
The ICE stands for?
Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Wow.
I often have a hard time putting those together, but there it is. These are folks who essentially operate in cooperation with private prison corporations, sort of set up their own separate prison system that's devoted entirely to.
And it's privatized?
It's partially privatized.
Wow.
The operations of the prisons.
So somebody's profiting from it, basically.
Absolutely. So we're talking about the opportunity for quotas to be put in a place. According to TWAC, the quota in Northwest Washington State guarantees a minimum of 800 beds to be filled at the immigration jail in Tacoma, which is privatized by a corporation called Geo Group. So ICE is required by this contract to find at least 800 people at all times to be detained in this particular facility.
Yeah, wow.
So it means that there's essentially the ICE folks can never stop. Their contract requires them to continually search out and detain people based on either immigration status or perceived status, because people who are here, quote, legally in the country are also swept up in this for one reason or another, and occasionally are deported, even though they're American citizens, because of language barriers, cultural barriers. So it's a shattering a thing that's happening alongside everything else that happens with the prison system in our nation. And so that it's the Trans and or Women's Action Camp that has been doing work very recently to protest and bring attention to ICE holds and detention centers in the Pacific Northwest. So that's some great work. Again, Trans and or Women's Action Camp, TWA. See, and there's folks who participate in the camp here in Portland who have brought my attention to this, and they've been doing solidarity movements in Seattle most recently. So there's some things that are going on.
Well, thanks for telling us that.
Yeah. Another something that's going on. Again, we're back in Seattle. Our PNW big sister, I suppose, is a movie that some folks put together, Pinkwashing Exposed. And I just watched this documentary. It's been out for a little while, I think since last year. And the folks who put it together have offered to allow it to be put on for free in any city, anybody who wants to organize this. So if you're interested, head to pinkwashingexposed.net, take a look at it. And then, I don't know, think about whether you want to organize a showing of it. And what it is, what this pinkwashing is about, is there's a great number of campaigns.
I've never heard that term before.
Yeah. There's a great number of campaigns on behalf of or in conjunction with the Israeli government to boost support for the Israeli government's policies in the Middle East. Mm. That operate in this country. And there's all sorts of levels. There's all sorts of money flows. There's all sorts of groups. There's even a sister city here in Portland. Portland has, I think, 9 sister city relationships. And one of them is with a city called Ashkelon in Israel. And Ashkelon was a Palestinian city until 1948, when it was begun to be swept clean by the Israeli army. And so this pinkwashing campaign is a propaganda piece that the Israeli government has been participating in conjunction with a number of other groups operating here in the U.S. And what it is that Israel is being billed as this haven for queer folks in the Middle East. Mm. So it's compared to, you know, the rhetoric compares it to Islamic countries and their treatment of queer folks. You know, that Israel is this really progressive place. It's a haven, even though it's not as though Israel is welcoming in Muslim queer people in any number. I mean, that's not what they're looking to do. They're simply looking to build themselves as the safest place for queer folks in the Middle East. And part of this, of course, is based in attracting tourists from the West. So you can go to Tel Aviv in particular, and you can have this great time, and there's great beaches, and these promo videos with these, you know, everybody's got these great bodies, and they're in their, you know, in their skimpy suits, and they're hanging out, and there's the sun, and there's clubs, and there's lots to do. So it's a really well-developed marketing campaign. And what these folks, including Dean Spade, who I've talked about a couple of times recently, helped found the Sylvia Rivera Law Center in New York City, and has done amazing work on trans issues across the nation. And is also an amazing writer, amazing speaker, someone well worth interacting with, however you can find him. Dean Spade was part of this action in Seattle to disrupt a particular event that was happening, wherein essentially Seattle city government, with the sign off of this civil rights commission, we're going to do a sort of a fluffy "Isn't Israel Great for Queer Folks" kind of celebration. And so these activists intervened and said, "Nope, this isn't, you know, you're only telling one side of the story. Let's talk about the rest of it." The event was canceled the night before, which created this uproar. And the Seattle City Council ended up apologizing. Mm-hmm. You know, how could this have happened? Why would we cancel an event like this? These are important conversations to have. And essentially shutting down the other facets of how you're going to talk about Israel. So Pinkwashing, the movie, the documentary at pinkwashingexposed.net, starts to get into that. You know, what does it mean to nationalize this false sense of security? Based entirely, really, I mean, not entirely, but based on a propaganda campaign that's meant to make Israel attractive to queer folks, both their tourist dollars and also their support for Israeli government policies in general.
Do they have Rainbow Star of David stickers? I'm actually looking at your sticker on your water bottle there. You've got this wonderful rainbow flag on a Star of David there.
It's true. I do have that sticker on my water bottle here. I once got on the Max.
But the Division of Israeli Tourism is not the ones making them.
No. Well, no, not at all. No, that's not what it's meant for.
Good.
It's simply meant to represent me in my complexities. I got on the Max a long time ago, and I had one of these Star of David stickers with the rainbow flag colors inside of it. And this woman, she said she was from Houston. She smiled at the sticker. She said, "You know, my grandson has one of those." And I know that she didn't recognize the Star of David. She only recognized the rainbow flag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it was really clear in her face that the flag she understood, the Star of David, that just, you know, that didn't have an impact. That wasn't what she was talking about. So pinkwashingexposed.net. Check it out. And hey, let's talk. You can message me on Facebook. We're on Preference Radio is our Facebook page. If you want to like the page and see what we're going to do in the future. I post some articles and some events coming up. Not a ton. There's so many things happening in the city now. It's a joy, and it's also overwhelming if you're trying to keep a track of every queer-related event.
But you're awesome.
Party.
I love what you do.
Thank you.
And that was
Thank
great you.
You
contacted me again, or you got back with me. I sent out the same emails I sent out last year for my thing. I was being kind of lazy this year because it's so much work trying to do all my own publicity for my stuff.
Absolutely. I'm glad to do it. Let's talk a little bit more about what is happening. You've got this.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah. Can I give a little update on just because I've got a lot of stuff happening. It's really cool. I'm still playing with the band Northbound Rain. It's one of the Grateful Dead tributes here in town. We're the ones with the two drummers at the same time. Very loud and very fun. And then my partner just got accepted into the Broadway Bears, if you know what the Broadway Bears are.
Not at all.
It's a part of the gay bear community, and they do show tunes, and it's a little vocal troupe. They do comedy and Broadway stuff. So they're doing a show November 13th, Friday the 13th, 14th, and 15th at Metropolitan Community Church. What did I say? Okay. And Pastor Nathan Meckley, or no, he's not calling himself pastor. He's probably going to sing. If you've ever heard Nathan Meckley sing, you will not believe it. If you've ever gone to the Metropolitan Community Church, I'm hoping to start my own band later this year. And it's very much reminiscent to the kind of avant-garde and ambient and experimental stuff that I was listening to in my teens, thanks to KBOO and the library. And so it's kind of like long Pink Floyd songs with progressive rock and Tangerine Dream, the Planet Gong, all that kind of fun stuff. So hopefully it'll be very Portland.
Yeah. Remember going to the library and checking out cassettes?
Well, it was all vinyl. Karl Heinz Stockhausen was one of the things that I remember going, wow, when I was like 15, and some of this amazing stuff. So growing up here was just wonderful. Like I said, my 12 years, you know, being a fundamentalist Christian, 20 years identifying as a Christian, was one of the best things in my life. And I think there's a place for them. They took me in when I was homeless. They have this wonderful depth as far as, you know, making sure your heart is pure, your motives are pure, that you're being mindful of the needs of others. I mean, Bible-based Christianity is absolutely wonderful. I just hope that they listen to us and know when they're doing things that are harmful, and we need to speak out against it. And conversion therapy, reparative therapy, whatever the heck they call it, whatever week it is, because they keep, you know, trying to dodge these terms that we're giving them, is so harmful. And yes, they're motivated people, and they really need to know. And the people that are thinking about going into some type of programs or therapy, whether it's free or whether they, you know, whatever it is, if you're trying to change your sexual orientation, really find out what you're getting into. And okay, go ahead. Yeah, I think it's time to go. I could go on and on about it, but I'm going to go on about it anyways on the 13th. Yeah, so August 13th, I'm going to be talking about my story about my 5 years involved in anti-gay religious work to try to turn me into a happy heterosexual. And I'm showing my art, over 30 pieces, and I'm going to keep my clothes on the whole time.
Jason Ingram, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, it was great to be back here.
We are Preference, a queer experiment in radio. We're going to close out with a little bit of music from Bobby Humphrey, one of the sweetest tracks I know. Coming up next at 7 p.m., Hard Knock Radio. Now, I'll be here next week, 6 o'clock. I'll be talking with the new executive directors of Q Center. You can get in touch with Jason Ingram about his experiences in the ex-gay movement, about his performance, or anything else at gaypray@gmail.com. Thanks so much, listeners.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard on the web at www.kbu.fm. The time is 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Matt Dishman Community Center annual block party on